This is Coral, and you're listening to The Forward Thinker Show.
Hey, it's Coral, and welcome to The Forward Thinker Show, the podcast where we share the stories and expertise of global leaders in business and technology. Today, we're joined by Rose DeCecilio. She is a former Apple and Microsoft intern, right?
Yeah.
And she's also worked in a lot of great research projects and a startup that's happening right now.
I also worked at a startup.
And she's also worked at a startup. So honestly, I think her title is just girl boss. How are you doing today, Rose?
I'm doing really good.
How do you feel now, the day? How do you feel today?
Today? I'm feeling pretty good.
Love your outfit, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It's very much girl boss. Well, Rose, the first question I always ask my guys, it's like, where are you from, Rose? Tell the people.
Well, similar to many of the other, of the rest of the people in Miami, I am half Hispanic. Mm-hmm. Well, half Hispanic. I'm half American, half Hispanic, in the sense that I was born here in the U.S., but my parents are from Spain and Venezuela. Let's just say Venezuela. And so I grew up between Miami and Venezuela. Mm-hmm. So I did part of my education here, part of my education there, and I came back for college. So I've moved around a lot. Mm. Different languages, different cultures, different people, different geography.
Different, what are you thinking?
So, yeah.
Yeah. And that's so important that you had all those varied experiences. It's something that we'll touch on later today, but I guess, because this is a tech podcast as well, we need to know, why do you like tech? How'd you get into that?
Great question. So I would say that I really like applied problem solving, and I really enjoy breaking down problems into abstract form. Mm-hmm. Too many big words, but the main point is I like having frameworks and ways to analyze situations, and I thought that computer science was, or my degree is in computer science. I thought computer science would be a great tool to teach me how to do applied problem solving. Through my degree, I learned how to do these things, like how to break down problems. And given that computation and that computer science is a very narrow field or narrow, you know what the input is, you know what the output is. It's very easy to constrain the question that you're asking. So being in there, I realized, oh, you know what? I actually like having a little bit more of the ability to explore, to not have the known inputs and the known outputs, but rather to be able to ask all the questions for the why. And I mean, that's how I ended up starting at Apple and how I then went to Microsoft and, you know, startup and everything like that. And so I think that what I really like about it is that it gives me the tools to ask questions.
Like your reason for why you chose tech is very different than most people's reason.
You think so?
Well, like there is a subgroup of people who want to get into computer science because they just want to get a job and make money and just...
That's a definite... goal, yeah.
Yeah, to hyper specialize in something.
Sure.
And it's something that I've noticed as well. Like as I'm finishing my degree, I tend to see a lot of characters of people who tend to over specialize in a certain aspect of computer science, and then they just do that, and then that's how I'm gonna get a job, and that's how I'm gonna stand out, and that's how I'm gonna live a better life. But I wonder if that's really necessary, because you are a person who has different interests and stuff like that, and yet you still went to big tech, and you still are not, you know, super specialized in something. So what do you think is, like, what are your thoughts on those people who have, you know, hyper-specialized in a subsector of tech?
Well, I'll answer the question in two sections. One is, like, based on interest and personality and just how people organize mindset and everything like that, intelligence as well, or abilities to perform in certain types of intelligence. And the second, I would say, is more so like the cultural or the macroeconomy of things. In terms of personality, there are people who are very detail-oriented, who like structure, who like optimizing, cleaning, organizing. And then there are people who like to create. There's obviously in-betweens those two. But if you go into an engineering college and then you compare that to the students in architecture, very different people.
Yeah.
So I think already by them having chosen a field that's engineering, similar to me, mm-hmm. even if I don't fully associate with the engineering mindset, mm-hmm. is that you want to ask questions and you want to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And then like problems of efficiency and problems of functionality and problems of problems. Mm-hmm. And then more so of your creative, you like expression, you like mm-hmm. transformation. So I think in that sense, maybe people, there is a higher mm-hmm. association in choosing an engineering degree to then wanting to specialize in something in specific. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the most functional way of doing it, as it's very hyper-competitive.
Yeah.
Specialization requires a lot of alone time mm-hmm. to study. It's very individual. So that's already other personality characteristics or behavioral or, you know, neurological characteristics that associate with that. And then in terms of macro, micro, the economy of things is that there was a big boom mm-hmm. during which specialization and the ability to overperform on one particular task mm-hmm. was really valued. Mm-hmm. But as processes and systems have evolved to be more like operational, like mm-hmm. you essentially know the process that you need to go through in order to get to create a, like a machine learning pipeline mm-hmm. or to manufacture a certain type of product, mm-hmm. It becomes more valuable to understand the bigger picture mm-hmm. because you have machines that are now opposed to what we originally thought machines were going to replace, you know, blue collar labor. They're really replacing white collar labor, mm-hmm. the tiny specialized mm-hmm. areas of knowledge. So I don't really necessarily think that it's bad or good that they're specializing in anything in excess, but having breadth of knowledge really gives you a perspective that you can't have if you focus too much on the pixels of life, but the pixels of knowledge.
Yeah, I think, like, for those people, I always, to be honest, like, when I first started out, I kind of felt jealous of people who already knew what they wanted to do with their degree. Like, similar to you, like, I wanted to get into computer science, not because of like a big job. Like, of course, like that was another incentive. Oh, but like when I was 15 years old and I was in like the Girls Who Code like summer camp, they showed me a video of a dance group who used her knowledge of coding to make like light up suits. And then she used that in a performance. And I'm like, that is so cool. Like, I want to use my knowledge of technology to help me become a more efficient creative. And so, but when I got into college, I saw a lot of little groups of people who were really hyper-specialized in a certain area, whether that's AI or game development or front-end development or back-end development or, you know, cybersecurity. All these people, they were hyper, I've met a lot of people who were really specialized in these areas, and then they were able to get, you know, great, they were able to progress much faster early on. And I was, and like every time someone asked me like, oh, Cora, what do you want to do with your CS degree? I'm like, I don't know yet. And then they would be like, oh my God, you know how to talk to people. You would be a good project manager. Or like, oh no, wait, you like creative stuff? You should do UI UX. And I'm like, I feel like right now, I'm still cooking.
Yeah.
And you know, when someone comes into the kitchen and you're cooking and they're like, are you done yet? Are you done? What are you doing? I'm like,
I'm cooking.
I'm like, cooking.
The system is trying to push you into the box and you're trying to see where you can kind of fit in. And you're like, I don't fit. I don't fit. I don't find a fit. Yeah. And you're like, is there something wrong with me? Did I choose the wrong thing? Yeah. What's going on? Yeah.
Yeah. And people told me that, like, oh my God, Cora, you're everywhere. Because, like, I accepted the fact that I don't know anything yet, but I also didn't want to limit myself either. So, like, literally, like, my first semester, like, yes, I did a hackathon, but then I did a pitch competition for data analysis. And then I helped in one, like, in every hackathon, like, I assumed a different role, whether that's project management, UI, UX, to sort of see the same things from different angles. And then in my internship with Deloitte, I did, like, application and cloud security. So I got to see the security side of building software. I started flying around the United States and meeting a bunch of cool people. And then now it's when I'm doing software engineering with Dell this summer. So it's like I've been trying every little piece of the puzzle to sort of understand the whole aspect of the software development pipeline. But something that has been a struggle for me is sort of like specializing in something and not like picking something so soon enough. And it feels like everyone around you already knows what they're doing.
You're taking too long.
You're taking too long to figure it out. And I feel like
they're gonna leave you behind.
Yeah. And it's like, it's something that affects everyone, especially if you're an entrepreneur or someone in the tech space where you want to, let's say, for example, you want to build a business, you want to solve a problem. But if you don't have a different perspective, how are you gonna find like problems? Like how are you gonna, like, how can I say this correctly? Like, how are you going to come in with the right perspective if all you know is just about one specific thing?
Yeah, you need context.
Yeah. I'm wondering, because there are some, I was in, like, a seminar before that was like, oh, you need to become, like, you really need to understand, like, a problem really, really, really deeply. But that's in terms of, like, once you already, like, have a problem to begin with. I want to understand, like, before that, like, before you even start ideating or testing things out, like, how can you as a person come with a different mindset, you know? Those are things I think about all the time.
I mean, as you should. There is no point to making a decision when you're unsure.
Yeah.
And it's great that you found a utility to CS for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there should be more people who are educated. It would be preferable. Not they should, but it would be helpful to them, to people in general, to have more of a technology understanding, mm-hmm. to have more of an engineering, a medical, so many different understandings. It would really help color mm-hmm. how they see life. Mm-hmm. It would really help them see life in through different perspectives mm-hmm. that you can't unless you've had that training.
Mm. And what do you feel like has helped you sort of come at peace with, you know, having different interests and trying different things out?
Well, when I first started in CS, the first course I took, I loved. I thought, okay, fantastic. It was just C++. And they were explaining to us, you know, the basic atoms of programming, which is like types and like structures and all this stuff. And then right after that, I did a research internship. And from then on out, I got stuck in the you got specialized mindset because the research internship was they throw you into oblivion. They're like, we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. So we already got our funding from NSF. We just need to mm-hmm. tell NSF that we did something with you. Mm-hmm. Go figure it out. And I am very much achiever's the wrong word, but I really like to get work done. I mm-hmm. like to have success, to have process, to have mm-hmm. structure, to have outcome, to have output. Mm-hmm. And in that, I was just lost. I'm like, I don't know what's the input. I don't know what's the output. I don't know what question you're asking me. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you want me to do it. Mm-hmm. I would ask questions. Whatever. Point is, I got stuck in the you got to specialize mindset for forever. Mm-hmm. And it's not until like I did my first internship in software engineering that I realized, wow, this is not for me. Like I very much, I was blown away by how organized and structured Apple is. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, you are a factory. You are a factory that produces software. It's fantastic. I don't want to be part of this factory.
Is that where like the term cog in a machine comes from?
Yeah, probably.
Well, yeah, probably. I love the efficiency. I love how you structured and organize the process and the progress in the system. Holy hell, I don't want to touch it. I don't want to be a part of it. I want to look at it from above and move pieces. I don't want to be a piece on the board.
So there I learned, you know, it's great to be aware of how all this works, but I don't understand the context. I can't ask why, because we need to ship like right now. Mm-hmm. I can't take my time to fully explore my questions. Mm-hmm. I just need to produce. And I'm like, I don't like this. Wow. The next internship I did was Microsoft Research. Fantastic. Actually, no, the next one I did was a startup, but I did Microsoft Research. Fantastic. Everyone was super smart. It's like a little subsection of Microsoft where all they do is ask why. And there I learned, wow, there is no process other than real creativity. I mean, you can create processes just like in UX, UI, mm-hmm. UI, UX. There's like frameworks that you can use and tools you can use, but there's not a clear cut process. Mm-hmm. And I love that. It's like fantastic. You give me the reins, you give me the ability. What I didn't like is that there's no product.
So it's like every step I go through, I'm like, I want to see things through a buff. I want to ask the questions, but I also want an output. Because if it has no functionality, what am I doing?
And that's how you can have all, you use all those different experiences, and now you can use it for to build a business.
Well, no, it's, I've learned that, you know, right now I'm in a project where I'm trying, I'm in a project, so an ideation phase, I need to talk to customers. And what I like is that I can do everything. Like, I will get, just like you did, like you saw the same system from multiple perspectives. I want to do that from the perspective of providing a product, but also managing a business. And so that brings me to explaining to your question of how did you accept or come to terms with CS not being CS as CS is sold, not being your thing. And it's that I've, through all of those experience, now I've realized that the two main areas that I'm really into, that I that I'm pursuing, are product management and then business management. And so that could be consulting, that could be the UI person, that the UI process, that could be the sales. The point is, I want the bigger picture, or at least that is my goal. If I can't get there right now, that's fine. But I have a clearer idea of what I want. So it took a while, but through all of those experiences, since I got a very, there's like in this building, there's a quote that says, don't sit in the center, go to the extremes. That's where all the interesting things are. And that's true. So I got software engineering at the extreme. I'm like, I like it, but I don't love it. Thank you, but no. Thank you, but next.
Oh, thank you. Next.
Are you on the graphic?
I did research, and I did research here, but I did research over there as well, like in Seattle. And I'm like, okay, I'm also the extreme. Thank you. I'll keep you in mind. Not necessarily next, next, but like what I've been thinking in that realm is looking into like synthetic biology. So maybe in a few years next. And so the last thing that I've really enjoyed is the product side. But not any product. Like, I don't know. This is why you see so much turnover in software. People get bored. I mean, software is awesome. You're building the infrastructure that holds the world together at this point. But it's difficult to be really that interested about the efficiency of a system that is so abstract that it barely touches anything at all. So it's like, that's why people switch jobs every 2 years. So it's like, product, yes, but it needs to be a product that I care about. And so that's where the example of like working at the startup, I worked at a startup that was located in Redwood City. I was at California, that's like in the San Francisco area. I met them while I was an intern at Apple. The most serendipitous story, I met some of the kids who worked, they lived in my same building, a corporate building that Apple gave me, so that was fantastic. So I interned with them, and what I believed, I still believe very much in their in their product or what they're essentially offering. So even though I didn't get to do anything related to product because they were still very much in their first year, just contributing, I was essentially analyzing how it is that we could be more HIPAA compliant, whether we even needed to be HIPAA compliant and all the security aspect of that. Nothing that I knew at all. I knew nothing about it at all. But it was interesting.
Just there, like, boss the walls, just like.
And the worst or best part was that I was fully remote, so I was managing myself. I'm the only successful remote person in the company. But anyway, so that's what I'm saying. Product and business, I need to care about the business. And what I'm liking about potentially working at a consultancy or a company that fully focuses on just providing products, product management services or business management services, is that I'll get to see a lot of studies. I'll get to see a lot of examples of how different businesses in different industries and different sectors. I get bored really easily. So having that variability, I think will be quite helpful.
But do you feel like CS kind of gave you that sort of, is like a good base? Because I hear, like, I had Jose on, and he told me about how in Stanford, everybody studies CS or minors in CS in some way. Like, even if you're a dance major, you minor in CS. And it's so interesting that over there, they have a really strong startup culture over there in the Bay Area, and in Stanford has a really strong startup culture. And it's so interesting that everyone who goes there has an interdisciplinary mindset of like CS as a base, and then they add on top different things, whether that's CS and music, CS and dance, CS and like business, or like, and it's just, it seems that CS has become sort of like the cheese pizza of the business world at this point. I know you have your feelings about CS.
Oh no, the cheese pizza thing. I was just like, okay.
Okay. But do you feel like having CS sort of helped you get to that place?
Twofold, my answer and then the Stanford answer. My answer is I think CS gave me a perspective that I wouldn't have had otherwise. Mm-hmm. When I lived in like, mm-hmm. I'm part of that generation that's right between millennial and Gen Z. I started using the internet when I'm like 10. Mm. I had a flip phone, but I have no line. But I found like the specific file type to download games. So I was kind of on the verge of like the techie people, but not the techie people, because I didn't understand much. But I knew, you know, this is all just like packages and like files, and like you just need to figure out how to use it that way. So I think CS gave me the perspective, like the underlying knowledge to at least be able to see it in my head. Mm-hmm. Like in before, I had been more so, I have a thing, I want to figure out how to do it. Like I have a want, I want to download a video, or I want to do this. And I can kind of figure it out, but I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how it works. I don't know anything. And CS gave me that perspective. In terms of Stanford, similar to how we were talking about earlier, how it would be helpful for people to be better educated and have more context in the different fields and like in the realm of knowledge that humanity has acquired up until today, I think that, just like you're saying, Stanford or the Bay Area has a very strong entrepreneurial spirit. Mm. I think that the point of studying CS is more so to have that awareness, not necessarily to build your own thing, but it is the awareness, because at the end of the day, you're not going to be a coder. You're not going to design the database structure. Mm. You're not going to select the framework for the UI. You're not even going to do the UI research. If you are really the passionate person, the person who is not the builder, but the creator, mm-hmm. what you're going to do is go out and figure out a problem and then talk to people and essentially be the translator between the customer and the engineer, between the customer and the product. So I think that's just the ability to translate. I don't think it's the ability to build. As much as you might have the ability if you're really dedicated and you care about that, but... and maybe that's what it provides you, the ability to still create your first prototype. But at the end of the day, if you stay aligned with your interest in the creative aspect, you're not going to be the builder. You're going to be the translator.
That is something that like I'm like sitting down with, is like being a translator, just like being able to translate technical terms to, you know, what your customer needs, and then like what your customer needs into technical terms for the technical teams.
Yeah.
And it's all about designing a great scalable system for your business to grow. That's something else that's really important.
Well, the design aspect, the scale aspect, it's like YC has this great line, which is build things that don't scale. So at the beginning, while you're still figuring out what your customers want, you don't want to scale. Why would you optimize for a system you don't know is even wanted, is even needed, will even be paid for? So that's at the beginning. And I mean, I don't think necessarily today you need CS. There's so many no-code tools that as long as you understand how to build with them, you can test features out very simply, get the prototype going, and then get a product manager who can be your translator for the engineers. Your job as the visionary of this product is really to relay and communicate directly with customers. How close you are to engineering is kind of a preference, and depending on the technicality of your product, if you're more in like biomedical, it would be very helpful for you to be aware of biomedical processes, of new technologies, of everything. But if you're more so like in the social aspect, or even like a notion that like designing Notion, that's more so understanding what are the necessities of note taking or something like that. So although CS is at some point was quite helpful, maybe today is not as necessary. More so it's just being able to understand your field, the creative field or the analytical field that you're in. Having that knowledge will be helpful, and the more technical knowledge will be helpful, but not necessary.
wait, you can you go back? I want to go back to that point where you said that when you're first starting out, you shouldn't build stuff that scaled.
Yeah.
What do you mean? What? So when should you
think about that? Once you've validated your idea, once you have, once there are so many customers on your platform that it's actually breaking. Once it's necessary.
So when it's almost at the breaking point, that was very scary.
Like, we have so many customers, we have so much demand for this site that it's literally, you know, timing out, that it's literally falling.
Damn.
That's when you scale, because that's when you know you have something that people really, really want you to scale. Mm-hmm. We think about it a lot of, in terms of, and this is, again, like the economics as it's changed throughout time, is that in the past we didn't have the ability to complain as a customer. Mm-hmm. So it was just what was supplied was what was taken. Mm-hmm. But now, as we have so much supply, now mm-hmm. it's in reverse. It's more so the consumer demands and the consumer gets, to a degree, of course. So unless you build something that people really, really, really want, desperately need, like you're solving the pain point, there is momentum, there is request, there is demand, mm-hmm. there's no point in you scaling. And this is where a lot of entrepreneurs fail, is that they invest too much too early. Like, in terms of building a legitimate prototype, mm-hmm. they build an MVP that's too expensive. And more so with the no-code tools that there are today, it's not necessary. Mm-hmm. You can build you can build it yourself almost.
Yeah. But with the no-code tools, you're eventually going to have to pay the no-code provider.
Well, yeah, but it's still a lot cheaper.
Like, yeah.
Combining all the no-code tools for, I can't say it, how well of, like, how many users on an infrastructure, but it's like $50 for a month for a system.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is here, do you want to build it? Or do you want to hire someone online to build it? But it's still a lot simpler than you having to buy the domain, set up the... Oh my God, the back end, set up the database, start designing the front end, design the framework, hire, you know, it's a lot easier.
It's a lot easier.
Yeah, and it's like 3 years of development, it'll take you a month.
Damn. You know? Yeah, that's really what you need.
Yeah.
And I guess what's something that you feel like could help, you know, like entrepreneurs understand that, like, I guess... You know what you're talking about, like investing too early. People who fall in love with the idea instead of the problem.
Sure.
That is something that is something that's coming to mind, of like people who just like have a great idea. That's what they start off with. And that's why they invest so early, because the ego.
Well, it's yes, it's the ego, but then it's also the lack of awareness, the lack of context, no information. Mm-hmm. It's like if people are screaming at you, I don't like your product, mm-hmm. you're not going to go out and keep giving them your product. You can change it. Ask them, is there anything you like about it? Mm-hmm. Is there anything? Or do I scrap it all, start from zero? Mm-hmm. It's yes, it is the ego, but it's also the choice to or not going out and asking for feedback.
Mm.
I had a similar conversation I think a week ago or something. We were talking about decision making, and it was about there's two types of decisions that you can take. Decisions that you can take back and decisions you cannot take back. Mm-hmm. So if you invest too early, if you pay a development team to create everything too early, you can't go back. And now you got something that maybe no one likes, mm-hmm. that costs you a lot of money. And you know what?
Yeah.
Rather than making iterative, small, you know, decisions that you can take back. It's like, mm-hmm. I built a feature on a no-code thing, or I'm testing out, it's not even using a no-code, I'm just sending out surveys. Mm-hmm. And now I can change this wording, I can change that wording, I can add this other potential feature request or question to people. Mm-hmm. So that's the decisions that you can take back versus mm-hmm. the decisions that you cannot take back. You invested, you're stuck, you're chained. Mm-hmm. Versus, let me keep talking about it, edit, negotiate with the customer, with people. It's like, what do you want? What do I want? How do we make this work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's investing too early, making decisions that are irreversible without sufficient risk assessment. It's like the risk assessment process.
Isn't there like a thing in business called like a risk analysis?
Mm-hmm.
Where you like point out all the different things that could go wrong, or...
I know of the term risk analysis. I don't know the exact framework or if there's even like an analytic, or there's probably a statistical one. That's how insurance companies decide how much they're going to give you and how manufacturers give you a warranty. Mm-hmm. They say the first 3 months, because we know that most parts break after 3 months and 1 day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a whole thing.
Yeah. So there is like, I don't know if that's risk assessment, but I do. Yes, there is a concept or probably a set of frameworks and tools that can help you assess risk.
But I'm curious, because I'm kind of similar like you. Like, I'm a person who likes to take risks, who's very like risk oriented, and you know, those types of people who are like risk oriented, and how we said earlier, people who try different things out, they tend to like I don't know, I've heard that like you have to be kind of risky when it comes to like building something. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm going to copy BCG, their consulting firm, and give you a 2D matrix. So
what even is a 2D matrix?
Like a square.
Okay. Okay.
You know, okay. So on the X, like on the bottom, it's like amount of risk, low risk, high risk. Mm-hmm. And on the Y axis, it's like the ability to take back the decision and irreversibility of the decision.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't take risky decisions that are irreversible. This podcast, the exploration of different, your choice to not specialize. You've actually chosen maybe high risk, but the ability to reverse the decision. Mm-hmm. So you aren't risky. Mm-hmm. Risky is you moving to San Francisco and saying, I want a job as a data analyst. When you probably, or as a machine learning engineer, you probably don't want to be a machine learning engineer. You're taking a risk in going to a new city, attempting to get a job in a field in which you have very little to no expertise. That is dumb risk. So that's lack of reversibility. Oh, well, you could still move back, but let's say you sold your house here, you killed all your family. You're not being high risk and lack of reversibility. You're choosing reversible. You're iterating. You're testing. That's much different. There's stupid risk, and then there's smart iteration of risk.
You said the matrix is like in four, right?
Yeah, so it's four squares.
So let's say like the first quadrant. Where, how would we call that?
Well, it's like if I try and explain it. Let's just say like the X and the Y. I think people will understand. Yes. Hopefully they will. Hopefully. Your audience should be able to.
Okay, so that's good. So there's like a good type of risk that you could take, and then there's the dumb risk, which is something that people should be aware of. Because I feel like there are some like people who are like entrepreneurs. They call themselves entrepreneurs, but like really they just work at like e-commerce or like high ticket sales.
Okay.
Or like they're, you know, they like, I wouldn't say multi-level marketing.
Skinks.
But would you call like a MLM like a high risk?
High risk on the, what do you mean, high risk what?
Like a MLM, like a.
Like creating an MLM or working for an MLM?
Working for an MLM.
I think that's just stupid. I mean, there might be money involved. I don't know. There's probably money. Like, there's a lot of people who are going into insurance. And if you can get a lot of like life insurance, and if you can get people to sign up, then for sure you'll make money. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on what you want to achieve.
Yeah.
And I mean, this matrix that I gave you is a very simplified version. There's probably like 20 other dimensions to include. Mm-hmm. But these are the first two that or the only two that match our conversation. So
yeah, it's a good framework when it comes to making decisions for your life and the things that you want to.
There's other that are better that I can't really name right now, but sure.
It for now,
useful right now.
Yeah, for you just told us. I don't know. I'm coming here from a learner's perspective. I'm here to learn. So like, if I don't know something, then you can't even tell. You know, actually, I was thinking about that the other day. That like, you can make money off of people who don't know stuff.
Yeah. Yes, of course. I mean, it depends on how you're coming at it. Because, for example, Amazon is making money, like AWS is making money off of people who don't know anything about cloud. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're doing it in an ethical way. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on how, you know, your goals and how you're going about them.
So Amazon good, MLM bad.
I think it depends. Oh, I don't know. MLM as a key term just sparks. No.
In me.
There might be some way in which it works, but that's like the question of, you know, communism is good, but every attempt at making it work does not work. So
Rose does not want to get canceled.
She's like, anyways.
Nicole is dying.
Okay, well, I mean, like, what is, I guess there's a concept that I learned here at Startup called asymmetry of information.
Yeah.
Could you explain that?
It just means that some people know stuff that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, information is distributed unevenly because, obviously, just like sound, just like money, just like everything. Unevenly, I mean, it follows a specific type of distribution, but yes, it's uneven.
Mm. And so is that, like, when you can use people's lack of knowledge to make money off of that?
You won't use asymmetry of information to your advantage. I mean, that's, for example, an example in which it's actively used is like negotiations. Mm-hmm. If you have some knowledge, or even in criminal cases, mm-hmm. you have some knowledge that the other person does not have, mm-hmm. there's asymmetry of information and you're withholding it or using it to your advantage. Mm-hmm. So, of course, again, it depends on the ethicality of how you go about using that information.
Mm. And do you feel like now that you know, like, I feel like, because if you want to do consulting, knowing more gives you the knowledge leverage. Like, I feel like asymmetry information gives you leverage. So leverage is just like, I don't know how to explain leverage. I think that it was like a textbook definition of it, but it's just like,
you have an advantage.
An advantage, yes. So if you have, when you have leverage, sort of that knowledge base, you can use that to get more money from like clients and stuff. And then if you also have like the people leverage, so there's like the leverage of being able to work with people, which is, and like convincing people to like get into your business or like buy into your stuff. That's another type of leverage that you can use.
I think, okay, just to maybe make this a little bit easier to understand, let's replace the word ethical with brand. Mm. Because they're both the same thing. How you go about achieving your goals is depending on values, and values can be matched to particular types of ethical choices. Mm-hmm. And all of that could be like grouped under the idea of branding, mm-hmm. definitions of a person. So if someone is skeevy, mm-hmm. is a skeevy lawyer, mm-hmm. they probably not very ethical. That's just by association. If someone is a reputable lawyer, mm-hmm. then, you know, that also goes by association that they probably have good ethics. They treat their clients well. They're honest. Mm-hmm. They're decent people. Mm-hmm. So when you say that you can take advantage of people, yes, of course you can. But remember that the world is small. Mm-hmm. You have a brand. You have an image. People know who you are.
Yeah.
There is, of course, so much to gain mm-hmm. from abusing people mm-hmm. in the short term. But everything catches up.
Well, I'm not saying like abuse people, but
let's put it on the. You're saying there's a spectrum. You could use a lack of knowledge in other people to your advantage, but you could also use the lack of knowledge in other people to your advantage in an ethical way, in a decent way.
Right. So there's a new line,
a new framework,
a new spectrum.
Yeah.
Unethical. Asymmetry and then ethical use of asymmetry of information.
There's obviously a million other dimensions here, just like in the BCG thing. But it's like, yeah, how you go about doing things matters as well.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there is a lot of responsibility you have to take as someone who is starting something. You have to think about, you know, like you said, like we've been sort of the people who like tried a lot of things out. And so now we have a lot of great knowledge on different things. And then, but when we work with other people, you have to understand that some people don't have that experience. Some people don't have that knowledge that you have. And so you have to take that decision as a, I'll call this episode, you know, the benefits of being an interdisciplinary learner. Okay. Can I call you an interdisciplinary learner?
Sure.
Yeah. So if you have a Rose or an interdisciplinary learner, someone who has a lot of knowledge in different things, you sort of have to like take into account that like, hey, like I do have moral obligation. So like, for example, let's say if you work with a client and they want to know like, oh, what like
like, oh, I know that I saw this thing on my email, and it says that I should click on it because there's a virus on my computer, and something like that. And then you're like since you have knowledge of like technology, then you'd probably know that, like, hey, that's probably a virus in itself, and you shouldn't click on that link. But they probably think that, oh, she's just a consultant, because they don't know that you know. So it's like little things like that. Like, there's a lot of scenarios that you can use the different experiences you have to sort of help other people, or you could use it as a way of like not helping other people.
This is where communication, presentation, again, brand a little bit comes in, which is that you have a lot of knowledge, but unless you have the capacity to explain it to other people in a way that they understand, not how you think they should understand it,
translate,
yeah, then it's no use to you, because no one's going to believe you, no one's going to trust in what you're saying. So how they decide whether they hire people into the big consulting firms, like big four, I think it's like Bain and BCG and McKinsey and stuff like that, is whether you can communicate with customers, which are usually CEOs, who might not have a lot of analytical research knowledge, but they're very good operational executives. And so if you say something, though you know you're right, but if you say something in a way that's rude, condescending, short, unexplained, it's not going to help anyone, because the executive is going to listen to you and just be thinking, does this person thinks I'm stupid?
This person thinks that I'm stupid. And so they're not going to listen to anything you say.
So you need to come at it from the perspective of, I want you to learn, not, I know everything, listen to me, shut up, I'm right. So that's where being able to communicate and also guide the client, the customer, your coworker, through your thought process, creating documents, essentially being able to explain, show your work, I think that's very valuable. Yeah. Also, when you have so much sporadic thinking, you need to learn how to organize it, communicate it properly. Otherwise, I mean, very few people, more so if they have such high value time, they're very short on time, they're not going to want to be trying to decipher your story, your explanation. So,
yeah, I work in Deloitte. Even though I was in the tech side, they always gave us little activities so we could connect with interns from different sectors, including the consulting interns. Yeah. And something that they tell us, they told us at that internship, is to connect the dots. So connecting they say that like Deloitte is like this big thing, and there's different sectors and everything, but we all connect the dots. So if you're able to connect the dots and, you know, explain something that's like so random and then concise it and stuff like that, that's how you're gonna get more. That's how they've been able to get a bunch of clients and become a really big consulting firm. And professional services firm is the actual term for it. But it's so interesting, because that's exactly like what I learned there, even if I was doing like more of a technical role. So I was watching this TED Talk. I don't remember the name of it, but it was about, he was explaining how your brain learns better when you have a trying out phase. So a phase when you try different things out. And he was using a study of children who were learning math, the math concepts like addition, multiplication, division, things like that. And so they saw that the kids who would specialize early, like he was explaining the concept of like specializing early and how that can like stunt your growth a little bit in like your career. And then in the study, he showed that he explained that there was two groups of kids. So there was a group of kids who were learning math concepts one by one. So all of addition problems, and then all division problems, all multiplication problems. And then there was another subset of kids who were learning math problems, but from different sections of math, different types of math problems, but like in varied form. So it would be like one problem would be this type of problem, then the next problem would be another type of problem. So the subgroup of kids who were doing the different problems, they had a harder time figuring the new problems out, and it took them longer to learn these math concepts. Whether as the kids who did like every single problem in order, they were able to get through those problems quickly. Even though the second group of kids took longer to understand something, at the end of it, when they were presented a new problem, they were able to figure out the math problem faster. And the kids who did it in sequential order, of course, yes, they understood fast, but when they were giving a new problem, they had a hard time with it. So in the short term, specializing early will help you a lot. But in the long term, having that trying out phase, having that phase where you can try, when you see different experiences, either outside of your major, outside of your business sector, will help you so much in the long term, not only for your brain development, but also for your life in general.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's a sort of like the main overarching thing that we've been talking about today, is sort of how you can use that, you know, interdisciplinary learner mindset to help you not only in your business, but also in your life, whether you're in the world of tech, which often tends to be a very cog in a machine type thing sometimes. It can be like that sometimes. But like, if you're really a person who wants to build something, it'll be great to have, you know, those different experiences. But also, as you're choosing those different experiences, make sure to use the framework of how risky those take good risks while you're choosing what kind of experiences you want to have. So I think that's sort of the overarching lesson for today. So thank you so much, Rose, for coming today. I think we've hit a lot of points. Is there any?
As we always do.
So, Rose, I'm going to give you a chance right now for you to share any resources or things you would like to promote and how people can reach you.
I mainly just would like to promote this book called Algorithms to Live By.
Mm-hmm.
It's written by a Princeton cognitive science and computer science professor. He essentially translates a lot of the... I'm going to define it as, although his definition of himself is probably different, he takes CS algorithms and applies them to real life circumstances. Mm-hmm. So, Algorithms to Live By, fantastic book. You should read it. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I'm just on LinkedIn. Very happy to connect with people. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
All the resources you shared will be in the show notes as well. So, if you're listening in your car, you can always just look up on the podcast page.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Forward Thinker Show podcast. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.